Welcome to IMTV. I'm Alan Keyes, and this is Let's Talk America. Well, of course, we're still in the midst of the aftermath of the midterm elections. And one of the things that I find heartening at the moment is that Carrie Lake out in Arizona is still hanging on and still determined that they should be answering for all of the shenanigans that appear to take place there, as in some places they are not. And I think I wanted to start out by talking for a minute or two here about this very subject, because I think people are missing the very simple logic of our situation. And by our, I'm referring to the people of the United States. We're supposed to have a government of, by, and for the people. The first that existed in point of fact to this extent of encompassing able-bodied citizens and others who are naturalized, but with no criteria that you have to be part of this or that aristocracy, have this or that heritage, and so forth and so on. People have come from all over the world. They are part of the population of the United States. And I think that we are already an example of what we can hope for all humanity, that time when regarding one another in terms of our common humanity, we can keep in mind and try to respect those tenets of mutual respect for one another in terms of our basic rights and our sense of right, that we can establish a community that is then going to function in a way that respects the God-endowed, unalienable rights of all. And I say that advisedly. I know that there are people denying God and so forth. I often wonder to myself, though, how do they then justify the acceptance of common standards? Because those standards are not common and have not in the history of the world been common throughout the world. Different peoples located hither and thither and yon have had a different ground to stand on. But what we have been doing in the United States is proposing that the basic tenets that seem to be in common among all human beings could then be articulated and have been articulated in a way that doesn't suggest that they're simply a matter of human whim and purpose, but they are instead a matter of creation itself and how it reflected the activity of a mind, a will, a goodwill, thank God for humanity, that then guides us in how we understand what we should and should not do in relation to one another. Now, that word right has been badly misused, as I try to say pretty much every chance I get on the program, because it hasn't yet, I think, permeated our culture with sufficient strength to have an impact on how people think about the exercise of God-endowed unalienable rights. I think when people say the word right now, we have been misled by the misusage of the media and the politicians and others who benefit from misunderstanding the phrase. They like to speak as if these are our freedoms. Now, I'm not going to say that freedom isn't involved, but I try to remind people every chance I get that that freedom is not in and of itself a word that connotes right. The fact that I have in this or that circumstance a situation in which I act freely in a certain respect does not mean that that free action corresponds to what is right. You and I both know it. People who find themselves in certain advantageous situations down through the history of the world, it was mostly the advantageous situation in which you had money or and power. And you were then able to do what you pleased, and no one was going to try to get in your way because that power would crush them, otherwise inconvenience them, shall we say. Now, is that an exercise of right? No, you can claim it as your right because you have the enforcement power to make it stick. But in the sense that the word is used in the Declaration of Independence, is that an unalienable right? Well, it's obviously not unalienable. Why do I say that? Because somebody is bound to come along, and in the history of the world, in most cases, it has been the case that after a while, and sometimes a while is a long while, as with the Roman Empire or the Persian Empire in very ancient times, it can be a pretty long time in which One person or class of persons or group of persons rules over others, sometimes through a wide swath of the world around them. And people think of that as the way things are, and so forth and so on. But the premise of God-endowed unalienable right is not about what you do with your power. It's about whether what you do with your power corresponds to the premises of right, the understanding of right, the meaning of right that has been endowed, which is to say filled with substance, by Almighty God. That's the premise on which the United States is founded. Now, I think that a lot of Americans ought to be more worried than they are of the fact that we are now being invited by one of our parties to act as if there is no God, to act as if we don't have to take account of this phrase, God endowed, when we think about the exercise of rights, including those rights that are explicitly mentioned in the Constitution. Now, some Americans, egged on, I suppose, by the half-truths that are spoken by some people in the legal profession in the United States, they actually think that the only rights we have are the rights enumerated in the Constitution per se. And of course, it's not true. And it's made pretty clear in the Constitution that the rights that are there and that are, in one instance, delegated, the powers delegated to the national government, right? All other powers that are not delegated to the national government are reserved to the states respectively and to the people. Folks often leave that out. We continue to enjoy the prerogative of exercising God-endowed unalienable right. And when we stay within the boundaries of God's intention with respect to that right, then we don't have to fear that somebody has the warrant to interfere with our activities. But we have to keep that in mind, because it does mean that we are responsible for respecting a standard of right that isn't just a matter of our own preference. It's not even just a matter of the preference of enough individuals that we've gathered together so that if they agree that we're going to do X, X is going to be done no matter what. Think about the times in human history, and I have to think of it with some gratitude myself, because in the 19th century, obviously, and in the years that were in the 18th century before, while the United States was being framed and the Constitution was being written and so forth, there were people who were mindful of the fact that there's a transcendent source of right that doesn't just reflect human power and will. And I know people say, well, what if you don't believe in God? Well, the Constitution of the United States was written in light of a reference to the authority of God. What are we to do with that reference? Simply throw it away? If then, what upholds the standard of right for all people? Not just for this person or that person, this group or that group, this privileged aristocracy or skin color or background. No, the Declaration actually committed the United States to a course that looks at people in terms of their God-endowed humanity. And in particular, with the exercise of freedom, the use of freedom to do what is right according to that standard of God. That's what the Declaration refers to. Now, you might think that we could just assume, because those words are not taken from the Constitution itself. But the Constitution is acknowledged to be and has been from the beginning a part of the organic law of the United States. What does organic law mean? It's like the organs in your body. It's something that specifies the way things are arranged in order that you can exist and function properly in that existence. So the Declaration was that statement of the basic premises that then give rise to the logic that results in the limited form of government that is established by the Constitution, which then leaves the ultimate human power in the hands of the people at large. And I think the question that's in front of Americans these days, though they don't many of them realize it, is that our choice of parties is more and more coming to represent a choice between going back to the old way of doing things, where the question of government power was simply decided by who had the power, represented by either the military strength or the monetary strength. So if you were rich, you were powerful. If you were in command of arms, usually in the form of armies and things like that, that were organized in order to serve the purposes of certain controlling people, individuals, classes, name it as you will, that constituted the power of government. I hope people realize that that's not what constitutes the power of the United States government. The power of the United States government is based on a reference to what is done by a standard propagated not by our will, not by our money, not by our power to overcome one another in this battle or that battle, in this field or that, in this way or that. No. It is propagated by a standard that transcends all of that. So then when we act according to the provisions that correspond to that standard, we are doing what is right according to the endowment of God, and we have the right to act as we do. And that right doesn't extend to just a privileged few individuals. You can have the most money in the world, most power in the world, and so forth and so on. But when it comes to being part of the body politic of the United States, you get your one little vote that you can cast along with everybody else, and nobody is going to be deprived of that vote. And you could say to yourself, well, money is going to allow you to organize and do this and that. Yeah, but it's not the only factor of organization. A matter of fact, if we were still as cognizant as we ought to be of the relationships of power between our different levels of government, we'd realize that one reason why we have to take seriously all those different levels of power is because at the grassroots level, power is accessible to people on account of their status as American citizens, natural born, naturalized, and so forth and so on, not just on account of any other form of power that they might have. That always, of course, as we have certainly discovered in the course of American history, what do you have to do in order to exercise that power effectively? You have to know your own mind, and then you have to know others and work with others who are of the same mind. And by coming together, you can form a power that exercised at the ballot box through the voting process in various stages, then determines who's going to represent the body politic in the use of the national instruments of government and in the use of the state and county instruments of government all the way down to the city and local level. See what I'm saying? And that's accessible to everybody. And you can learn to practice it as people have. Now, of course, we have different ways of coming together depending on what we consider to be our paramount interests or set of interests. So in the background of our politics, there are churches and there are unions and there are civic groups and organizations of various kinds where people come together based on a common sense of what is right, a common sense of what they recognize conclusively as rights that come to us from a transcendent standard that we are then all obliged to respect as we deal with one another. Now you're going to tell me, and rightly so, because I never forget about it, that through a certain part of our history, most of the first part of the 19th century and on back into the latter part of the century in which the country was founded, where Black folks were concerned, that standard was honored in the breach, as they say, famous old phrase, right? But when you honor something in the breach, the phrase is supposed to remind you that wrong is being done, that something is being broken. Was that ever forgotten in the course of American history? A matter of fact, it was remembered even at the time that the Declaration of Independence was written. That's why the words that do not refer to skin color, ethnicity, and so forth and so on, but only refer to the relationship between the human being and God. And so all human beings created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable, meaning to say that you cannot get rid of them, you cannot step out from the burden of them, from under the burden of them, and neither can the groups of people that get together, because all human beings are subject to that same standard. And when we remember that, we get to the heart, I think, of our challenge, or the challenge to our citizenship. Do most people remember that, or are politicians now reminding us of this every day? No, they don't, do they? Mm-mm. They all like to talk as if the whole meaning of everything in politics is getting this done and getting that done and getting the other thing done, when in point of fact, the fundamental reference is not the reference to what you're doing. It's the reference to the standard that allows us to make a judgment about whether what you're doing is right according to the endowment of God. According, if you quote the Declaration, to the laws of nature and of nature's God, the laws that bring into existence the universe, including humanity itself, and that, when we think about it, also provide us with everything we need in order to exist. Now, that is, of course, the assumption of a benevolent God. If you take for granted that being here is a gift or is a benefit, then you're going to accept that notion, that somehow the logic that is in operation in the world that brought forth Alan Keyes as a human being, but also brought forth humanity itself, is a world that is informed by provisions that we are obliged to respect when we consider our actions, so that our choices conform to the basic premises of will, endowed or filled with substance and direction and content by the power and understanding that informed in the first place that decision and action and power which brings us into existence. So it is not the power and money of human beings that our God endowed unalienable rights express. It is the power of Almighty God, representing, if you want to put it in broader terms that won't, press the religious buttons on people who don't either understand or accept the concept of God, then most still, including, by the way, most scientists, some of whom are loud in their objections against this, but if they didn't think that the world was organized in a comprehensive fashion, as if by an intellect or mind and will and power, because you don't get anything done without that power, that then produces the result. And that is really, when we say the name of God, that's what we're referring to. And I think almost everybody, even a lot of people who deny it, are actually, when they think things through, operating according to an assumption that there is such a way of being, and that the universe reflects is the result of its activity, and that's what's explicitly stated in the Declaration of Independence. That appeal to God then provides a ground for all human beings, all the beneficiaries of God's goodwill in that respect, who then choose to follow the provisions of God, walk under the protection of those laws of nature and nature's God, that then, when we choose, give us the standard of right by which we have chosen, and therefore make it clear that we are exercising right when we act. So when you ultimately say, I have the right, you are referring to that chain of reasoning which justifies, according to the fundamental premises of God's goodwill, your use of the opportunity that you're merely physical and material power, whether it be your bodily power, your military prowess, your money, and the ways that you can use or abuse it in order to affect other people, all that kind of power. But it exists under a law that reflects the greatest power of all, the one that brought it all into existence according to certain understandings, called, they're referred to as laws, but they reflect the provisions that make this and that kind of existence, including human existence, possible. And all of that is still there in the underpinnings of our way of life. But I have to acknowledge that we're now in a great struggle because one of the parties has abandoned that understanding. If I were to look Nancy Pelosi in the eye and ask her in a straightforward way, do you subscribe to the tenets of the Declaration of Independence, which are the tenets on the basis of which the American people exist, not the American government, but the American people exist on the basis of those tenets which are in the Declaration. And when they went to the Constitutional Convention, the representatives of the people at that time were trying to think things through in a way that would allow the whole people then to reflect the premises of God toward the whole of humanity, not just toward the Englishmen. They started out that way, by the way. You go back and look at some of the things that were written in the 1760s, and even I think early on in the 1770s, you will see people writing, and they refer to the rights of Englishmen, the rights that are kind of happenstances of history. But that's not what we refer to when we use that language. And when the word right is talked about, even in our legal system, we have to keep this in mind. Because at the end of the day, it's what empowers the citizen body of the United States. We don't have a king or a queen or an emperor or anything like that. No, the whole citizen body is the majesty that we have to respect. And we disrespect it when we step off of the ground that it stands on, the ground of that understanding of God and the standard of right that is provisioned by God, which we are assumed to implement when we act. If we don't implement that standard, then we find ourselves operating in disregard for the most fundamental laws. That's criminal activity, by the way, if you think it through. And we are standing apart from those premises of right, which should characterize our actions, and in the name of which we can then say that we are exercising our rights. Because it is those rights which come to us by the unalienable status. You can't take it from us, nor can we willfully give it away without destroying who we are, first as individuals and then as a people. Lying Democrats, in the name of their Marxist pursuit of this and that pointless utopia, which they have never achieved anywhere on earth, or even a semblance of it, to tell you the truth, they go, and all these people now in the Democrat Party, they fuss around with this, and really what they're doing is luring us away from the ground that as a nation gives us our position as the king, the queen, the sovereign people of the United States of America. Ponder that. I'll be right back after this.
Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Mark.
And I'm Dr. Michelle, and we want to invite you to our new show, Furthermore, where we bring you the tips about hope, the truth about health, and how to preserve your freedom.
So watch us on Brighteon.tv. We can't wait to see you. We can't wait to spend some time with you. So join us on Furthermore.
You want to see Uncensored Truth, go to Brighteon.tv. They're a great partner with us and His glory. We love them. We love everything that Mike is doing. And go there for truth. Brighteon.tv. God bless you.
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com. Here we grow again. Brighteon is expanding with our new daily live stream in Espanol. Anchored by hosts like Fior Hernandez, a former Telemundo and Fox reporter, Brighteon TV in Espanol is bringing over a dozen new hosts and shows to the Spanish speakers of the world who are seeking out the truth on everything. To watch, go to Brighteon.com, click on the Espanol live stream, and prepare to hear the truth in a whole new language. Brighteon TV in Espanol.
You want to see Uncensored Truth, go to Brighteon.tv. They're a great partner with us and His glory. We love them. We love everything that Mike is doing. And go there for truth. Brighteon.tv.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America. Now, today, I guess I'm indulging myself a little bit because as I have been pondering all of the events, things that are going on in various parts of our political process now, and in the aftermath of an election that often fills your mind. And sadly, I keep wondering, as I am reading through the various reports, how much longer we will sustain our actual self-government if a lot of Americans don't wake up to the fact that one party wholesale and elements of the entire political elite have now abandoned the basic premises on which America was founded. Now, of course, there are people, because they haven't thought about it, they don't think about whether the House is going to continue to stand when all the foundations have been torn down, blown up, and otherwise discarded. They don't wake up every day thinking about how are we going to keep this House going on the premise that we ordinary folks are still the rulers. And I've noticed now that in our media in particular, they have already started to use language that speaks as if the people who are in our Congress are our rulers. And they use that word, and it always makes me cringe. Because even though in the Senate, for example, they have a different title, right? They are senators. Senator is a word that actually refers in its root to age, and therefore gravitas, for the accumulation of knowledge and experience that then can lead you to have not just better ideas and information about how life works, right? But also the assumption is that that has given you an ability in the midst of all the comings and goings and challenges of human life to keep your head, keep your eye on the things that are fundamental and make judgments in light of that, that will then preserve the larger whole and ultimately the largest whole in a political sense, which is the whole people that have committed to your hands some portion of responsibility for the governments established by their good will. Now, sadly, I think we are already seeing that a lot of elements of our politics, they abandon this. And one of the things I've been pondering is the situation with John Fetterman, who gets into office. And I think, judging by the debates and everything, I have serious questions about whether this choice on the part of the Democrat Party actually reflected goodwill toward the voters, toward the people of the United States, who, by the way, are the sovereign people. When we have an election, you shouldn't sit there thinking, oh, well, we're choosing the rulers now. We're going to decide who makes the rules. Not quite. We're going to decide who represents us in making the rules. Because whether we call them senators or congressmen, they are all of them representatives of the people who elect them. Now, that poses a major problem for these people, like Kamala Harris, for example. I raise her because she is known to have a lot of associations with people in the BLF and all of these different backgrounds that are mostly, as some of them describe themselves, trained Marxist-Leninists. I always find that an interesting concept. Trained Marxist-Leninist. What is a trained Marxist-Leninist? I presume it's somebody who accepts the understanding of government that was reflected in the writings and activities of Lenin and Marx and people like this. Now, let me ask a simple question. You think about government in the old Soviet Union, the USSR. You think about the government in Eastern Europe under the rubric of the Communist Party there. They had elections in those places. What you have to wonder about in the case of the European countries that were part of the Soviet orbit, they actually had different parties. They had Communist Party, of course. And the Communist Party were that select few people in the who were accepted into what is essentially that elitist element, that at the level of their power, they are the little clique of people who really have the controlling interest. Now, they allowed in Eastern Europe other parties to exist and have their input, as it were. But that input was never decisive. Because what was decisive was the power of the Communist Party in whatever country we're talking about. Most especially in the USSR, where elections were elections among people carefully selected by elements of the leadership of the Communist Party at this or that level. You never got away from it. And so you have to ask yourself, to what extent, when we hear people talk like this who are Marxist-Leninist, are they going to impose that way of life on us? Because that's not the way our system is supposed to work. We're not supposed to have a little clique party and they become the rulers and everybody else is sort of falling in line. And we then have the privilege of going through elections that are essentially a sham because he who makes the choices makes the choice. You may think you're going to the polls and making the choice, but actually the choice was made by people who dictate who is going to be available for your choice. Now, we still operate on the assumption in the United States that that question of who's going to be available is also decided by election. That's what primaries are about and so forth. But it has occurred to you, I bet, that if we are no longer operating in an environment where the people in a given party actually believe that sovereignty rests in the people, and they think instead, they reject God, they reject all of those notions, and they think that the only thing that matters is power. If you happen conveniently to have in your hands the power, then you do have the rule. You have the power, you make the rules, you are the rulers, and that's why they're more and more trying quietly to get us used to the notion that the people who operate in government are our rulers. But they're not. They're supposed to be our representatives, and that means that we must scrutinize and reject them when their performance departs from the understanding of right that should bind our goodwill, because it represents the laws of nature and of nature's God as provisioned by that higher power which has determined how things work in the universe as a whole. And therefore, what must be respected in the existence of each and every human individual in order that that individual will be treated with respect for God's standard, not the standard of whoever happens to be wielding power. Now, I bet if a lot of these people who are communists had that idea in mind, they wouldn't have killed so many hundreds of millions of people in the course of establishing and holding on to their rule in the major communist countries, China and Russia in particular. When you pause and reflect on that thought, you really do have to hope that we're not in that situation, don't you? Are we headed toward that? Are we in the midst of it? Has it already started to show its ugly face in America? Is that partly why we felt that something like darkness was coming over the country during the whole way they handled the COVID so-called pandemic? I think that it's good thinking to entertain the possibility now being bleated about and spoken about sort of openly by a lot of people that the form of government we thought we had is gone. It's already gone. And maybe it's not going to be possible to reestablish it. And when we go out, we'll just be going through the motions, and other people will be led about by their noses and their dependencies and so forth and so on. That's part of the plan that has them spending money like water to give people the impression that the source of their very existence, the livelihood on which they depend, can be taken away by their rulers if they don't toe the line. It was a mentality that was. They were pushing to have that mentality prevail wholesale during the course of the pandemic. I hope you noticed that. So that it even came to affect, our police forces, our military forces, and so forth and so on. You establish a world in which the standard is set by this little clique. Everybody walks in line, starting with the careful selection of the people who are the armed forces of law and order, the administrative forces of government, so that they will be reflecting not what best represents the conscious mind, heart, goals, purposes, intentions of the people, but what best implements the already determined path that has been established by the little elitist clique that is now controlling things. Are we living in such a world? And if we are, why do we go through the sham of elections? Well, I think most of us go through the elections because we don't yet accept the notion that they are simply a sham. But when a party starts with apparent malice aforethought, offering up candidates who actually appear not to be capable of carrying out the job that they are then going to be elected to if they win, don't you have to wonder why they are insulting the intelligence and sovereignty of the American people? It would be as if you were a king or emperor and you had your prime minister, your chief minister, putting people in place who were incompetent to do the job that they were being assigned to. But they were telling you that this is all we have to offer you. This is what you're going to have to put up with, Your Majesty. Majesties didn't usually put up with stuff like that. They fired the person who was suggesting that. They didn't accept the bad people, ill-performing people who were being offered to them. But we'll see. People who don't have, not because they will it necessarily, but don't have the capacity to serve. It seems to me that we ought to be looking at that askance, as they say. That is to say, with a quizzical expression on our face and expecting some kind of explanation of why our role and our authority in that role are not being taken seriously. Because people who take the authority of the sovereign seriously will not offer the sovereign inadequate individuals and say that is going to carry out the purposes of their sovereignty. And if we let them get into that habit, then who do we become? We become people who are no longer in charge because we're allowing them to fill up the seats in the legislature and in the bureaucracy with people who no longer reflect and can no longer reflect because of their various incapacities, a commitment to respect the basic premise of that sovereignty, which is respect for the laws of nature and of nature's God and for all the people who are making their choices conscientiously in order to implement right according to that standard. That's actually a standard of discipline. It's a standard of discipline that needs to be reflected first in the people themselves, and then, of course, in the people they choose, so that everybody offered for choice or standing up to offer themselves for choice needs to be able to answer the question about how they correspond to the likelihood that what they're going to do is represent our goodwill to make a choice that represents the standard of right according to the highest power that determines right, which is, in the parlance of our founding, the power of God and the laws of nature and of nature's God. They have to be able to convince us that they're going to do that. Well, in this particular case, we got the beginnings of a little farce in which somebody who, however he got into his situation, may be incapable of carrying out the job and didn't prove to us otherwise in the course of the debate that occurred in Pennsylvania between Oz and Fetterman. I don't think anybody came away with a sure sense, oh, that's somebody who's really capable of the work. No, you didn't. Whatever might have been true in the past. And we do have to deal with human circumstances, and we need to be honest, not ruthless and nasty, but honest. And our leaders need to be honest when we choose them to take the lead in determining what's actually going on in the government and faithfully then representing that to us and representing us to that so that the two things harmonize. That's what they're supposed to do. It's not what the Democrat Party is doing anymore because they take their cue from the totalitarian parties that were established in the USSR, in China, in North Korea, and places like this. And whatever motions they go through, looking like they're consulting the people and having elections, all a sham. And unless you're content to accept the notion that our election should be a sham, you really need to be upset about the very possibility that elections are being stolen, that fraudulent activities are going on, that steps are being taken that essentially substitute the will of a little clique for the will properly reflected of the whole people when elections occur. That's what got me thinking about the Kerry Lake situation, because in Maricopa County there, and so forth, there are, you could call them, I suppose, irregularities, but when you look at the scope that they took on, you have to ask yourself. There was her opponent, Hobbs, and she was in charge of putting together the election process. Alarm bells ought to go off when you hear that. So the person who was running for the office was in charge of making sure that the election would be unscrupulously carried out and reflect the actual will of the people, that no shenanigans would take place, such as I think obviously took place during the campaign and election in 2020. That's really a serious matter, because if we don't attend to it, if we don't make sure that that is not happening, then our sovereignty as a people has been stolen away, has been destroyed by folks who are now putting us through a sham so that we'll be quiet or quieter, but who actually mean to do things their way, regardless of us. And if that keeps you going to the polls and makes you think, well, at least I have the semblance of being somebody in this country, when it's the destruction of our people, the abdication from our responsibilities as citizens of the United States, and we are dooming our posterity, which I think some of us take quite seriously because we have children and we sort of have hoped all our lives that those children would continue to operate in an environment where they would enjoy the dignity and the burden and responsibility of self-government. And I want all three of those things for my kids. Dignity and the burden and responsibility. Why? Because you become better people when you are living out in a serious way the notion that you're not just in it for yourself, but that you have to think, as it were, for the whole community. Asking yourself, as you are deciding who best represents you, whether that person is going to represent your best effort to do what is good for the whole people, so that everyone will be treated to the extent humanly possible with justice according to God's endowment. Now, we'll be allowed, therefore, to avoid doing wrong according to God's will and persist in doing right, so that they are then allowed to rise to a level where that right doing will probably amass to them success and the consequences of success, but they will then use those consequences for purposes that improve the situation of all people because they are sincerely committed to making sure that that standard of right is respected for all people. I thank God that there were people in America like that, and the proof is in our history. Because as a Black guy, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, wouldn't have had the life I've had, wouldn't have been part of the government and done things that I've done in that regard and so forth and so on, except for people in the course of both the 18th and 19th and 20th centuries who committed themselves to think through right and righteousness according to God's will and then act accordingly, and did so, by the way, at times and in circumstances when it did not serve their material interest, when it did not guarantee them wealth and power and so forth and so on. But they were doing it because it was right according to God's will. And they stepped out into danger and acted with courage in order to lift up folks that they didn't really have much acquaintance with, know or understand, a lot of them. Because that was the reality of the world. But they committed to try to do right for those people, my ancestors in America. And some of them, of course, risked and gave their lives in the course of the Civil War and even the pre-Civil War period, while others fought on the other side. Also, by the way, Lincoln was right. I often say this on the show. Both sides said they were appealing to God, but one clearly appealed to the God of the Declaration, who took seriously that standard of right, which then determines the difference between doing right and doing wrong. Doing right does not mean doing whatever redounds to my advantage so that I'll make more money and I'll get more power and I'll be able to live as I please. You know, that's what a lot of our politicians are doing now. They're approaching us as people who have forgotten the most basic meaning of our responsibilities as citizens of the United States. For in the first instance, that's not going to the polls as an individual out for him or herself. That's establishing a form of government that takes those polls seriously because they reflect the burden of human sovereignty placed upon us by our regard for the provisions of right according to Almighty God. And that in doing so, then make us responsible for the good of the whole community, for the outcome as it's going to redound, for good or ill, to the whole community. I've noticed a lot of politicians don't even try to encourage that in the electorate anymore. They simply make crass appeals to individual self-interest and try to create situations in which people will be more dependent than ever, not on their own responsibility and ability, but on some phony promise made by a government that's given out money hither and thither and yon, the way the Biden administration has been doing, which has been devaluing our currency, causing all this inflation and burdening everybody without regard for the good of the whole community. Do we want elections that are like this? Because we're going to keep having them if we keep letting the Democrats and all others who act this way get away with it. And as I've experienced it, you say, I haven't experienced the actual effect of what I'm talking about in my career in politics, because my career in politics was sort of always at the level at the end of the day of primaries of one kind or another, deciding who is going to be standing for X, Y, or Z. Not in every case, because I was nominated a couple of times for the U.S. Senate. But the thing that you have to know is that the real aim of it all, it has to be respected by those who are conducting that process, and it's not going to be respected unless at the grassroots level we are actively involved. If you wait for election day to come and then make your choice among the choices that are arrayed for you by people who are now more and more deciding those choices without regard to your goodwill or that of Almighty God, then you're going to wake up and realize that our self-government is dead and that we have, after all the life and time expended in getting rid of slavery and getting it out of this country, we will have dictated a future in which, if you look at the predominantly communist countries, you come to a conclusion that is supported, I think, by the actual facts and circumstances of people living under such regimes. For whatever people may try to call them, they end up being slaves. Now, I don't mind the thought that I am the servant and slave of God. But the servant and slave of some little clique getting its will because of fraud and lies and deceit and a misapprehension of justice that destroys the fundamental premise of my country? No, don't think I should accept that. Do you? Ponder that. We'll be back after this.